It's a new year in politics. We're kicking it off with the political junkie and Ken. Happy 2017. I've missed you. It's good to talk to you again.
I miss you too, Carrie. Happy New Year.
You've been covering and analyzing politics for a long time. Ken, I have to believe that 2016 ranks up there among the most tumultuous and unpredictable political years you've seen in a long time. Is that right?
Ever. I mean,
ever.
I've never seen anything. No,
wow.
There's no question. I mean, first of all, it just showed all of us how ridiculous pundit predictions are because, I mean, we've said this over and over again. We never saw the rise of Donald Trump. We never saw him winning the nomination. A day before the election, we never saw him winning the election, and yet he won. And you know, you could say, well, he got 2.8 million votes fewer than Hillary Clinton. That's not the point. It will be he, not Hillary Clinton, sworn in on January 20th. It was a remarkable year. It was tumultuous, as you said, and it was also mean and nasty and childish. And I don't know, you know, you always say that on New Year's Eve, you say, well, I know next year will be better. I'm not convinced it will be better, but it'll certainly be as interesting, that's for sure.
So, Ken, where do you, big picture, where do you put the level of frustration of voters in, I don't know, 3 or 4 decades of watching politics? Is that also somewhat unprecedented for you?
I think so. I think, look, I would also make the case that cable TV, both from the left and the right, will accentuate the frustration and the anger, and they'll, you know, they'll fan the flames. But you know something? We saw something in, for example, in 2006 and 2008, we didn't like Bush. We didn't like the war in Iraq. We didn't like the faltering economy. And we elected Democrats. We elected Nancy Pelosi and the Democrats to take over the House in 2006. We elected Barack Obama in 2008. And then when things didn't seem to be working, on the turn of a dime in 2010, you had 63 new Republicans elected to the House with that Tea Party wave. So we've seen since 2008, all the way through 2016, a back and forth between voter frustration and disappointment and disillusionment. So they're not Republicans, they're not Democrats, they're Americans. And if they don't like what's coming out of Washington, they'll be very quick to change their minds.
This is the thing that I wanted to ask you, is whether the velocity of those swings is accelerating. And I think you've just made the case that the answer to that is yes.
I would say yes. I mean, you can make the case that, well, in 2016, only the Republicans only lost 2 members of the Senate, only 6 members of the House, so there wasn't much change there. But you also had an 8-year legacy of President Obama that, you know, in the course of a couple of weeks or a couple of months could be completely wiped out, starting with Obamacare, starting with another Supreme Court justice named by Donald Trump. It'll be just completely different. You think of all the things that were expected to happen and did happen starting in 2009 with Obama's election, and that'll soon be, I would suspect, a distant memory because you'll have just a completely new leadership, a new tone.
Political Junkie is on with us. If you have a question for him, you can tweet it in. It's at Kerry, KerriMPR. So Congress being sworn in today, Ken, when the dust settles, what do you think this relationship between Congress and the president-elect, who will then be the president, is going to look like? I mean, give this 3, 4, 5 months. What do you think happens then?
Well, that is a great question because remember how the kind of relationship Donald Trump and the Republican establishment or the congressional leadership, their relationship throughout 2016, it was not warm. It was not trusting. Donald Trump ran against Republicans as much as he ran against Democrats. And so there was a sense that Donald Trump was this independent force that, you know, completely separate from the two parties. Now, of course, he has proven, I mean, there was a lot of talk during the campaign, is he a real conservative? Is he a true conservative? After all, he once backed Nancy Pelosi. He once backed Hillary Clinton. He was once pro-choice, things like that. But if you look at his cabinet, it's probably the most conservative cabinet in history. I mean, I don't know what history means anymore, but certainly in anybody's lifetime, that these are very, very conservative men and women appointed to the cabinet. Of course, assuming most of them, if not all of them, get confirmed. And then you also have the fact that you have not only basically with a Republican president and an overwhelming Republican majority, this could be the most conservative administration, people are saying, since the 1920s. And there's some evidence to show that. Of course, you know, again, I mean, there's some questions that Donald Trump could go off on his own on trade, on relationships with Russia, that the Republican leadership and members of Congress won't abide by. But of course, that's something to watch.
You know, I think it's instructive that you said a minute ago, we don't really know what conservative is anymore. And do you say that because although Donald Trump says, you know, he's going to run a conservative administration, a lot of what he does is not traditionally conservative. So is he leading, you know, a change in the idea of what it means to be a conservative or not?
Well, I think so. I mean, we just don't know what he like. For example, you know, the Republicans since 2010 have been saying their mantra has been repeal and replace Obamacare, and that still may happen. But Donald Trump during the campaign said there were at least several things of the Affordable Care Act that I like. The fact about pre-existing conditions, you can't deny somebody for that, or that children under 26 could still be part of their parents' plan. The Republicans weren't crazy about that. Donald Trump was. Donald Trump does not like these trade deals. Neither did Bernie Sanders and Elizabeth Warren. So on that sense, that is a cry away from Republican orthodoxy. So look, he is unpredictable. He's proven unpredictable, sometimes to the exasperation of many Americans. But again, as we learned in 2016, predicting what he's going to do or what's going to happen is a fool's errand.
It probably wasn't too hard to predict how he'd feel about what happened in the House last night, which is this measure to take away a lot of the power of this House Ethics Committee is going to be voted on in the House today. But Trump was quick to take to Twitter to say that he was pretty unhappy with it. How much do members of the...
Yeah, I was going to say, this is not, just to make it sure, this is an independent group called the Office of Congressional Ethics. It was formed several years ago when many members felt that the House Ethics Committee and also the Senate Ethics Committee as well were too busy, too willing to protect their own. So this was completely independent of Congress.
These are people who are not members of Congress.
That's correct.
Okay. Outside of Congress.
And so the House Republicans last night, in the middle of the night, it's, you know, remember when those the Democratic National Committee put on those debates at 4 in the morning to protect Hillary Clinton?
The House Republicans
did their own thing by basically gutting the Office of Congressional Ethics and putting it under the umbrella of the House Ethics Committee. Apparently a lot of members didn't like this independent committee who was maybe too willing to talk about individual members' ethics, and they felt that, well, this is not the way we should do it. So to his credit, Donald Trump said this is not the way to do it. I don't know if it was just lip service, but he made a point of saying it's not what he wanted. We'll see what happens. I mean, what's also going to be interesting today, and I think we have about 45 minutes before Congress comes in, how many Republicans vote against Paul Ryan as Speaker? How many Democrats vote against Nancy Pelosi for Speaker? To just see if there's any disillusionment among their leaders.
Well, I mean, we know there is, don't we? Because this is the formal vote, but the informal head count has kind of already happened, and they're in pretty good shape, aren't they?
Well, as far as winning, yes. But of course, we know we saw that certainly when John Boehner was Speaker of the House, there were more Republicans voting no on Boehner because they just felt he was just too busy coddling with the Democrats, which, of course, to some liberals think is ridiculous. But there were some conservatives who felt Boehner was too much of an accommodationist. But it'll be interesting with Pelosi. You had 74 Democrats voting against her when she ran for reelection as minority leader last year. And of course, you know, now is the actual vote for Speaker. But Democrats could pick somebody else. I mean, not that they'll pick somebody else. Nancy Pelosi will not be the next Speaker. But if there's disillusionment in the Democratic Party, and we've seen it in the DNC contest for the chairmanship of the DNC between Keith Ellison and Tom Perez, the outgoing Labor Secretary, we'll just see how much of a vote there is against Nancy Pelosi.
You know, I want to come back to that DNC thing because that's interesting, of course, because Keith Ellison is involved. But this is a discussion that was had about Donald Trump's communication policy. And here's your mystery newsmaker sound of the week. Listen.
this president is not doesn't like to share his views with his inner circle. Mm-hmm. Try it there and maybe go out. But he wants to share it with the world first. Everything's a trial balloon. Nothing is real. Mm-hmm. There's nothing that gets that he tweets that's written in stone, because everything he does is to get a reaction and to judge. Well, then if I don't, you know, people didn't like that, I won't do that.
It's going to drive his communications people crazy. But who is that, Ken? Do you recognize that voice?
Yes, that was Tom Weber of MP. No,
it was
No. Was that David Brooks? I recognize the voice. I just can't get the
Joe
voice.
Lockhart, who was the...
Joe Lockhart. Yeah, that's interesting.
Who was the press secretary from the Clinton White House years.
From Bill Clinton. Oh, that's right. That's exactly who you're... Yep. Right. And look, it's very interesting because... You go back to FDR, but this is, you know, it's a fireside tweet president where basically he feels he goes beyond the media, beyond the reporters, and just goes unhinged, or at least unfiltered, on Twitter. And especially when you think of what he did on New Year's Eve when he said, "Happy New Year to all, including my enemies and those who fought me and lost." Ha, ha, ha. Well, he didn't say ha, 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 but that's basically
what it was. Yeah.
It's remarkable.
Yeah. Okay, to the DNC thing here, Ken. Remind me when the vote, does it take place in February? Can't remember.
Yeah, the DNC meeting is February 23rd to the 26th. The date of the actual vote is not clear yet, but there are at least four Democrats running to replace. Well, first, it was Debbie Wasserman Schultz, who was forced out by those WikiLeaks during the convention, and then Donna Brazile took over as an interim head of the DNC, and then she was also forced out by another leak. Of course, it had nothing to do with the Russians. I mean, it just so happened that it was just embarrassed the Democrats and not the Republicans. But so you have Keith Ellison, who's backed by the progressive wing of the party, the Bernie Sanders, Elizabeth Warren wing. He's also backed by Chuck Schumer, the incoming Senate minority leader. And then you have Tom Perez, the Labor Secretary in the Obama administration, seen as the so-called Obama/Clinton candidate. And so you have basically two visions of the Democratic Party, perhaps clashing between those two. You also have Ray Buckley, who's the chairman of a New Hampshire Democratic Party. You have the chair of the South Carolina Democratic Party, who's African American. But it's interesting, you don't have anybody from the West. It's really basically a Midwest and Eastern battle. And you think of the West, that was a stronghold for the Democratic Party in 2016. You know, the California, Oregon, Washington, Colorado, New Mexico. But they're not going to be represented in this battle.
Ken, two questions here. One from Twitter. When do confirmation hearings start and will they all be confirmed? When does that happen?
Well, the first one start next week, January 10th and 11th. There'll be a 2-day hearing of the Judiciary Committee where they're going to have Jeff Sessions, the senator from Alabama, who's up for attorney general. Also next week will be Rex Tillerson in the Foreign Relations Committee. That's the only two nominees who've been scheduled. I don't know if anyone gets defeated, but I suspect that Tillerson will get the most no votes. He, of course, not only between his wealth, he refuses to release his tax returns. He'll just give tax information for the past 3 years, and Democrats don't like that. He's also very close, as you know, with Vladimir Putin, and that just drives Democrats and Republicans wild. John McCain is starting his own committee investigation into that as well. So I suspect you could get 48 Democrats voting against Tillerson, for Secretary of State.
And the
question is whether you can get three Republicans. There are some people like McCain, like Rand Paul, like Marco Rubio, who have said critical things about them. Whether they can defeat him is something else. The last cabinet nominee defeated was John Tower back in 1989, but that was a Republican nominee in a Democratic administration.
And Lucinda online says, what's the most effective way to communicate with my elected representatives? Will they read a letter? Do they care about social media? Do I call the local or Washington office? Can you give some insight on that, Ken? How to get their attention?
Well, boy, I've had that same frustration for years too. How do I get members of Congress to pay attention to something I want to raise or bring up? And friends have the same thing. I suspect letters don't work. I mean, people say we've gotten 40,000 letters. I don't know if they read everyone. I think calling either Washington or your local congressional office and ask to speak to the communications director or the press secretary or things like that might work. But ultimately, well, I mean, I don't know if anything works. You'd have to have, of course, a groundswell of people calling in. And you know, ultimately, you don't get much of a groundswell. If you had a groundswell of people who, everybody who's opposed to Donald Trump, if that groundswell existed before November 8th, you might have a different president.
Wouldn't it be for constituent services for Lucinda, not the press secretary?
Constituent services, yeah, you don't call Washington for that. You call your local office in wherever their congressional office is, in their congressional district. I mean, that will still work. Look, they get reelected. The reason they get reelected is because they're known for constituent service, some members bit more than others. And if we're talking about that, then yes, you don't call Washington, you call your local office.
Are you telling me, Ken, that when the political junkie calls, the member of Congress doesn't drop everything to take your call? I don't believe
that.
Well,
you know something? I've been telling them I'm a friend of Tom Weber. And when I do that, you know, they
drop everything.
It's unbelievable.
Good to talk to you. I'll talk to you next Monday.
Thank you, Carrie. Happy New Year.
Ken Rudin, the political junkie, with us, and more conversations about politics.